Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Major news. White Wine Question Time is going live. We're doing 3 shows in London's West End in the autumn. I can't believe it. And we've got some incredible guests lined up for you. So on Saturday, the 18th of September at the Leicester Square Theatre, we will be doing a show with Craig Revel Horwood. Yeah. Just as you can smell the sequence of Strictly as it comes back to our screen. Then on the 9th of October, I can't believe they've all agreed to do this, but we're reuniting the cast of Grange Hill. So I've got Todd Carty, Tucker, Lee McDonald, Zamo, and Alison Valentine, who played Faye, and there'll be more to be announced. And then finally, on Saturday, the 13th of November, the cast of Dunbreedin, so Tracy Ann Oberman, Julie Graham, Tamsin Athwaite, Denise Welsh, Julie Newman, will all be joining us to do a live show. Tickets are on sale now, available from the Live Nation website, Ticketmaster, or wherever you get your tickets. Come and see us! Hello and welcome to White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks its guests 3 thought-provoking questions washed down by 3 glasses of wine. And my guest this week is the author of a brilliant new memoir, Hungry, as well as the host of a podcast called Comfort Eating. And she is The Guardian's long-standing restaurant critic, known for her pithy, funny, well-observed reviews. She's also a regular on MasterChef, where she is often arguably the most intimidating and withering obstacle standing between the contestant and the title. It's true. She's also been known to hold her own in the dictionary corner of Countdown, which is no mean feat when you consider she's already come face to face with Anne Robinson. Born in Carlisle, she began her career as a writer in women's magazines, working her way up from editorial assistant on Marie Claire to writing for More Magazine, Glamour and Cosmo, as well as very impressively publishing 11 critically acclaimed novels for teenagers. She's one of the most respected voices on the British food scene, and I'm so looking forward to talking to her today. So let's dial up and raise a glass. It's Grace Dent. Afternoon.
How are you doing?
I'm good. You laughed when I said about you. Well, I said pithy, not pissy, first of all. P-I-T-H-Y, because you are so pithy. I love reading you. By the time I ran into you a couple of weeks ago, I felt like we knew each other because you are a friend on the page.
Well, thank you for saying that. And yeah, when we ran into each other, what I loved was that I felt like I knew you too, because you've been on my television screen for forever. And when I saw you, you walked up and I just went, oh, hiya, as if I knew you. And then I thought, I don't know. And I love the fact we were backstage at something and we were so excited to be out of the house that within about 2 minutes of starting to speak, we got chivvied other ways, didn't we? And kind of got split up. So, exactly. Yeah.
We were at the Podcast Awards and you were with Jay Rayner. And the weirdest thing about the Podcast Awards this year was it was held in my local park, which is also his local park. And Jay and I have never spoken, but I have often been on the cross trainer next to him in the local gym.
Oh, my gosh. I bet that's quite the image. You see, I don't know whether I have never actually seen any evidence before of Jay going to the gym, right?
I can vouch for it.
He talks a good game of being at the gym, but I didn't know he actually went. So thank you for clarifying that.
No, not just a bit. He's there a lot.
I think that recently Jay has decided to take his health very seriously, and good for him. But it, yeah, I mean, look, it happens to us all, doesn't it?
I was
out this morning trying to get back into walking 5 miles a day. Like, you're either in that zone, aren't you? And when you're in that zone, you're sickening, and all you want to talk about is how you're in the zone. Oh, I feel so good. I just am waking up early in the morning. I'm not drinking at the moment. I feel so great, and I'm walking 5 miles a day. And then I just slip right out of that zone, and then I'm just back being
sloth.
A grot bag.
Yeah. Sloth. Just falling sitting, off the yeah. sofa into the fridge and then roly-polying back again.
Yeah.
And you know what, though? All that said, you never regret a workout. That's the problem with it.
Yeah, nobody ever really comes home feeling sadder after a run.
No.
You know? I mean, it's horrible doing it, but it's nice to have done it. I don't know who I'm telling this. I'm telling myself, because, like, at the moment, I'm not. Like, last time I had a gym membership, I didn't go for so long that when I eventually went back, it would have been less embarrassing to tell them I'd been in prison. Because, like, I thought, should I just say I've been in prison? Because rather than admit how many, you know, like, of the best part of a year and a half, I'd just been going, have my money, I'm not coming. I went back to the gym and they changed all of the entrance, how to get in, and the membership codes and everything. And I was just standing outside thinking, this is a low.
This is worse than the walk of shame home.
Yeah, completely.
Now, Grace, I have loved your memoir. I love comfort eating as well. What a great idea to talk to people about. And that really is, it takes your book, Hungry, which is sort of a love letter to food in all its grot and glory. Mm. I think somebody described your book as from frazzle to foie gras.
Yeah.
And it does sort of cover everything from your beige days to present day, where, you know, you eat the finest foods every restaurant has to offer, should you so choose.
Yeah, the finest emulsions and experimental cooking and fragments and whatever they're calling what's going on the plate. Yeah, I eat a lot of that these days. A lot of those.
Emulsion, talk to me.
Emulsion. Emulsion is kind of really just a type of a sauce, isn't it? It's just a sauce, but they always say, and it's an emulsion of yeast or something like that, you know? This is just the crazy world that I live in. But yeah, I do. I eat a lot of that.
I know. I've been having this argument of late with a group of friends who, for example, call swimming in lakes immersive cold water swimming or wild swimming. I'm like, I grew up in the country. If you got in the lake, you swam. It's called swimming. That's it. Right. Stop rebranding everything. And the emulsion, is that a rebrand of the sauce?
Well, first of all, I don't believe in swimming anywhere where I can't walk through something where I'm not going to get, you know, like a Veruca pool, right? I think that there should be bleach. I think that in London, one of the most frightening things right now is you're never 6 feet away, more than 6 feet away from someone banging on about wild swimming, right? And I also think that when the middle classes get really excited about wild swimming, basically they're saying it's a thing that they can do without seeing any poor people, right? Because they're basically going, oh my God, we went to this remote lake in the middle of nowhere. And it's like, they wouldn't get this excited if they were down the municipal pool, right? They just would not get that excited. I think I've come to the peak wild swimming, people talking about that at the moment. With regards to the languages we use for these ridiculous things. Yeah, I mean, look, it's just rebadging the same stuff, isn't it?
Yeah. So tell me, what's the difference? What's the difference between an emulsion and a jus?
Oh, well, an emulsion would be glossier and more set, and a jus would be a kind of thin gravy.
A thin gravy?
A jus would be, a jus is really a kind of a very refined pan scrapings with something added to it to make it's just gravy. It's
gravy.
It's just, look, what I would say about jus is that you never quite get enough of it if you're northern. Whereas like,
never,
because they'll always bring you just like a tiny, tiny taste of it. One of the funniest things with MasterChef is that the boys, whether it be Jay or whether it be Tom Parker Bowles, William Sitwell, the boys always drink the jugs of gravy because that is always where the greatest bit of the taste is, you know? So they always bring these little tiny jugs out and put them down. And then once it's all eaten, you always turn around and Jay's just got that jug up at his mouth.
With a straw.
There's something. Yeah. No.
But
anyway.
that's the sign of a good foodie. But what you do on your podcast is you sit and you sort of interrogate people's food life, which in turn allows you to interrogate their lives, because the food that we are emotionally connected to is often the emotion that sits around it that is the most pertinent by way of storytelling, isn't it?
Well, I always felt as if talking to people about food, and I didn't just mean restaurant food, but talking to people about anything they ate was the way that you got a glimpse into their life. A little bit like on years ago when MTV Cribs first came to this country, and you got more of a snapshot about what people were like when they opened their fridge than you did from anything else, you know? Mm-hmm. And I've always been fascinated. I mean, you interview people for a living. You know that moment where the sound tech says to the celebrity, just to test the levels, what did you have for breakfast? And then they start to tell a story, which is off camera, which is usually the most interesting bit of the whole bloody interview. Because they go, oh, I had a Kinder Egg. And you're like, what? You had a Kinder Egg? Well, and then they start to tell a story, or they go, you know, I had toast with whatever because my mum used to make that when I was little. And so with comfort eating, I suppose I always knew that when you interview celebrities normally, They're so used to talking about the same things all of the time, even if people are trying to be imaginative. Whereas when you get in and you start to ask them about that packet of Frazzles they used to have in the schoolyard when they were 9 years old because they were sad because, you know, their dad had passed away or whatever the story is, that is a way in to the corners and the crevices of their mind that they they wouldn't have pre-agreed to talk about anyway, you know? It's like they wouldn't have signed off that they were going to come in and do that interview. This all sounds very sneaky, but it isn't pre-planned, you know? Like I usually have a little list of what I'm going to talk about, and what I find is, I mean, the thing is with my interviews as well, I really don't like interviewing, you know? You love
it.
No, you love it, and you're really...
I do.
Brilliant at it, and you love it for me. Yeah,
I genuinely love it.
And for me,
but if I had to sit down and review a chicken breast, I'd struggle.
Oh no, but I can do that. I that's just joy to me. What, I can stay in bed, I can literally stay in bed and write 800 words about a chicken breast. Happy days, right? I'd be back on YouTube just looking at old goth videos by 3 o'clock. No, I don't really like interviewing when I get sent. I've never I've been writing for 25 years. I've been in the media for 25 years. And that idea of going and doing a junket where you get pushed into a room and you're trying to fight for an important line to go on the front of the paper. And, you know, I worked for the Culture Show for a while. I was like a presenter on the Culture Show on BBC Two. And they'd set up these big elaborate interviews, celebrity head-to-heads, and I was good at them, but I hated it. I've ran from interviewing for so long, and then in the end I kind of agreed to do this. So I think my point is I don't go in as an interviewer, really.
You can hear that. It's a chat.
No, I do. I kind of you know, like I sit down and I, exactly like you, I have a glass of wine and I wait for them to arrive, and the door opens and Rafe Spall walks in looking absolutely gorgeous and makes me a cheese sandwich. And that, my friend, is happiness, right? Like, inject that feeling into my veins every day. Oh, God. No, I mean, he's amazing. But, you know, it's that, you know, you know, Siobhan McSweeney from Dairy Girls came in, you know, Sister Michael, or you know, Lawrence Chaney, who won Drag Race. And people arrive and they talk about like the macaroni cheese they had with their mum when they were getting bullied at school, or, and it just gets, it gets really deep, really, really quickly.
What I wanted to do is ask you to devise your dream three-course menu, but I want you to swap out food and replace it with your big emotional standout moments. So I want a starter, a main course, and a sweet dessert, about the moments that make up that dream trio for you in life.
Oh my gosh. This is, you see, this is really, this is an absolute bugger.
I'm stressing you out now, aren't I? You're stressed.
No, it's okay, because I've got some wine. I'm going to take a little slurp.
They can be as significant or as insignificant as you like.
Okay. So this isn't in the book at all, but I always think, so my starter would be when I was 14 years old, I still do have, I've got a big brother and he's 10 years older than me. He's 10 years old. Called Bob.
I love how you remembered you've still got him.
I've still got him. He's still out there. It's in Stevenage, by the way. We lived in Carlisle, and Bob was the first to go. You know, I think that especially in the 80s and like, you know, the far, far north before you kind of fall into Scotland, that is. if you had a real ambition, you had to go, you know, and not just like a vocational kind of ambition to kind of build empires, but to see things, you know, to see the stuff you'd seen on the telly and to see the bands and live and that. And my brother went first, and he went to London and he lived in Kilburn for a bit. And then he moved to Manor House, he was living in a squat in Manor House. And when I was 14, and he was 24, I started coming down to visit him. And that just, I mean, this was like London in 1988, squat world. And whenever I think of a moment that made me and made me go, I can't just be in Carlisle with a husband who's a builder. Although I do regret that sometimes. I should have just married a builder and stayed in Carlisle. I could have had the most amazing house. But I would have had the biggest house in Carlisle. Imagine. I would just been going out with some guy, just extends the house all the time.
Nine garages, nine three driveways. Garages.
I would have been the Colleen Rooney of Carlisle. But anyway, so this moment that always makes me think I'm, you know, it really changed me was, well, just because we were going out, you know, when I was 14, it was very, I'm sure it is today as well, it's very easy to look 18, do the full makeup. We were goths, we were kind of gothy punks. And there was a place in Finsbury Park, a pub called the Sir George Robey. And they used to do a club called Club Dog. And we used to go there. And so there's a moment I always remember being 14 years old and dancing to Iggy Pop, The Passenger, and thinking, this is life. There's just loads of like punks and goths on the floor. And you know, I remember going home on the train back to Carlisle afterwards, and it took like 7.5 hours or something then, you know, like an old British rail train. And getting back, and I was in this like tatty leather jacket that had been eaten by rats, because we were going to parties where they'd liberated rats from like from labs. You know, this is the kind of people we were hanging about with. And I remember my mother getting me off the train, and I'd like back home to her, and I looked like Susie Sue, and she just was just horrified. She was like, "That's another it's another child we've lost." So
to the smoke.
Exactly. It's funny. I know I'm an old woman, because sometimes when I'm going through Finsbury Park, like we go past wherever it's like a cafe or something now, or like a creche, and I'm like going, oh, I remember when that was the Club Dog. I actually think that there becomes a point in media where you are actually ungettable, riddable of. It's just like they can, you know, it's like I've had more comebacks than Lazarus. It's like literally every every time they kind of go, oh, you're a little bit this. So I just kind of go home and just regroup. Right. I'm getting to that that kind of angry old woman part where you kind of go, I'm not being appreciated in my own lifetime, but they'll see what I'm like. Exactly. It's like I almost feel like declaring my own death just so that I can actually just turn up at the back of the crematorium and go, yeah, but you wouldn't commission me then, would you?
So coming to London and sort of, you know, finding your inner goth and your future self was your starter. What's your main course?
This isn't getting any easier. Right. Okay. I think, right, because I could talk about the, you know, the edifying aspects of going to university and studying English literature and having my first breaks and all that, but that's all in the book. And that was great. And I'm really glad all those things happened. But God, would I give anything sometimes to go back to flying off to Tenerife when I was 19 with a pack of girls from Carlisle? Do you know what I mean? And we were there for 2 weeks. And I think we went out at 2 o'clock every morning to go to the clubs. And we stayed out until 9 o'clock every morning. And we met hundreds of people and we wore tiny little mini dresses. And we wore no clothes, exactly like the kids today do. And we all say, that's disgusting. They should have more clothes on. And there's a part of me in my head whenever I try to create about what my nieces are or aren't wearing, I think, Grace, you were the worst. You were the absolute worst, you know. Oh, these children are so sexualized these days. It's like, no, you know, come on. So I think that sometimes I would, when I think about being 18, 19 and kind of going off on holiday, and it's the fact that you never really get back that amount of kind of carefree, kind of just carefree, kind of just partying with no regrets and no, you know, I mean, even just the bounce back ability of it, being able to get up every single day, walk back to the pool, meet people. So yeah, I think I do often think about the holidays I had then. You know, there was a very specific holiday when me and a load of girls went to Tenerife. We went to Ibiza every year, and we just had, you know, you did all the stupid things that I would now have banned, you know, like all the things. So that you're hiring mopeds and going to people's apartments to party that you didn't know who they were, and like going to parties and after parties and after parties, and you know, all the drinking by the pool and swimming at midnight and all the things that are a health and safety nightmare, let me tell you. You know, if I think what sometimes I'm trying to get, what I'm maybe getting at is, I wish I'd appreciated then that how pert and pretty and carefree I actually was. Because I think I walked about, even then I had like a touch, you know, by this point I think I felt very well grown out of my goth years, but like, you know, you're always a goth, once a goth always a goth, you know. And I think I was, I back then, it's amazing how much of your young, free, beautiful years you devote to just worrying about absolutely inconsequential
nothing
crap. Yeah. Like whenever any of the kind of children in my life get their heart broken, like I always try, without being flippant, I always try to say, there will be a point in a few years' time when I ask you about this incident and you won't be able to remember who I'm talking about. You won't remember like this. And if you remember the first name, you won't remember the second name. You know, you'll be going,
at best, this is an anecdote. Yes, yeah, exactly. And in the footnotes of your life.
Yeah, I mean, it's sometimes I kind of look back at those days and think, but you know, like, there's nothing like being young and going to a club and everything just completely going off at 3 o'clock in the morning, and there being, you know, 500 or 600 people jumping up and down in a room. And, you know, as we've come back to life as a country, and, you know, there's been a lot of people my age who are really angry that kids are wanting to go out, you know, that they're wanting, you know, they're wanting to go out.
Of course,
and,
they
know,
do.
When I, and, you know, whatever you feel about vaccinations and viruses, and that's a whole big other topic I can't be bothered to get into, there was a real joy for me in seeing people queuing outside clubs on a Sunday night, the first day they could, at midnight, waiting to get in. Because I thought, you know, there was clearly girls, you know, who were like me at that age, who were like, right, mini skirt on. I'm going
spray
down.
Spray tanned up.
Full spray tan. Spray tan, highlighter, push-up bra. I'm going to the club. And I'm going to listen to some great music.
Totally.
One of the things I think maybe I hark back to it as well, because there's no, I don't have any evidence. There's no photos. There's nothing. Right?
No.
And, you know, we're talking about formative experiences. It's really sad for me that I think that you should be able to do these things and get them out of your system. And then by the time you are in your 30s or your 40s, these temptations come your way, but you've already done it, you know? Like, and I think now there isn't a kind of opportunity for, you know, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20 year olds to just go out and do that thing secretly, you know, and it not impact them being an MP, it not impact them getting a great job, playing cricket for somewhere, like playing for like all of this. So, yeah.
Because we live a life that is now completely documented, captured on a cloud, and there is a digital footprint that, you know, follows, that will follow you everywhere. You're quite right. We were in so many ways lucky, because I remember those holidays. I'd have to come back and put my pictures in to be developed. That's how long ago I'm talking.
Yeah.
Okay, can I have your dessert now? Have you got a dessert for me? A sweet moment.
Oh my God. I'm going to have a little bit more red wine.
Have as much as you like, Grace.
I will.
Oil the wheels of conversation.
Oh gosh. Right. You see, I feel like I've talked about frivolous things. So the third thing, which is the pudding, but it isn't sweet. Although my mother did absolutely, it was one of her biggest downfalls was pudding. And I think probably, you know, that one of the things that's changed me has been my mum passing away. It was at the beginning of the year, and it was really
Grace.
Yeah, it was in February.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, darling, thank you. Honestly, but it's been a really strange year. But what I would say is that we were all together as a family, going up to the point. You know, it was going up to the point where she died. And, you know, I just think that if I am to look back on my life, I think that, you know, I'm never going to regret that. And I feel like I'm very different since it. So, yeah, I think that, you know, being up there and being with, you know, in the book, I talk a lot about going back and being with my dad. When my dad was, first started to kind of show very big signs of Alzheimer's and being there. And, but then, you know, this part of my life, which kind of, you know, wasn't in the book at all, has been, you know, going back and being with my brothers and being with my sister-in-law and just kind of that coming together and being during that kind of really like heavy bit, you know, of my mum kind of finally going, you know, because she's left like a massive hole. It's a really strange part in my life. I'm at that point at the moment where every day I think of something I just want to ring her and say, you know, like, oh. I'm like, do you still have your mum?
I have both my parents.
Yeah. It's like, no, I mean, it's very odd. Now she's gone, trying to work out who I am now. it's like you start to realize that so much of what you do is, comes with, calling them to tell them because you know it'll make them happy. And if you take that out of the equation, why are you bothering about what your dress looks like on MasterChef? Who cares? You know, why are you bothering how many books you sold? You know, it's, and these all sound very kind of big, cynical end of days things. It's not, these are very subtle things. Like, you kind of realize that you do a lot of things to kind of gain that happiness that you did when you brought them a painting when you were 6 years old, mm-hmm. you know?
So
I think it's really interesting how, as our parents begin to die off, we are generally at a point where, you know, I'm the same age as you, and it's that kind of, you're suddenly, we're in charge now. Like, sometimes, yeah. like, I make my...
it's quite frightening because you think, where's the adult? Like, and then you're like, shit, I'm the adult.
I am, like, we're in charge. Like, I always say this to, you know, I say this to my niece. Like, you know that line in that, was it Captain Phillips, where the guy takes the, where the guy is the pirate, and he goes, I'm the captain now. And, like, I just, like, and I keep saying this to my family in a menacing way. I'm the captain. It's me. I'm in charge. You know, it's like we've all moved up one layer, and now I'm in charge of where we eat on Sunday. And it's
yeah, the matriarch. So
it's an interesting time in my life. I think there's like this infinite possibility when suddenly you don't have you can break with all the traditions that you normally had. You know, like. Mm. It's funny how right away I got in touch with my brother, and I went, everybody's coming to me at Christmas. And he's like, Grace, it's July. What are we talking about? What are we talking about Christmas for? I'm like, everybody's coming to me, and we're all going to eat at 3, and we're all going. And he's like, whoa, have you been drinking? And it's like, no, it's just that kind of the traditions. We're going to reinvent them, but we're going to make them better, and we're going to. Yeah, so your head is...
We're going to upcycle them and make them your own.
We're going to upcycle them. So, yeah, if I was to look at the, you know, so with my meal of memories, I had leaving Carlisle because I had the eye on London, and I had absolute hedonism, and I had the moment of realizing that, like, I am not a little girl anymore. Like, I am the captain, right?
And you're the captain. Christmas at your house.
Everyone's having, and we are going to have fun.
I'll be there at 3.
We're going to have fun, whether we like it or not. Rules help control the fun. Yeah. You know, and you absolutely know at that point, I'll just get offered some amazing job somewhere and just fly off and do it. And they'll all be sitting at, they'll all be sitting at my house going, what?
I love that your menu covers all bases. There we go.
Is that,
you got there. Well
is
done.
That an okay menu?
I Cheers.
Feel like I feel like I've served you with an absolute roller coaster of emotions from
that's how that's
drinking.
How I like my food.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Okay, my next question for you. I think, you know, there's that old adage, isn't there, that if you love what you do for a living, you never work a day in your life. And I certainly feel that for a lot of my career, that's been true for me. You are paid to eat in the finest restaurants and pass comment on whether or not you like it. I mean, as jobs go, apart from being on Gogglebox, I can't think of anything better.
If they said, would you like to be on Gogglebox, I would just stand up, put my shoes on and begin walking there now.
There wouldn't... Who would you go on the sofa with?
I think I'd go on with Tom Parker Bowles, and because I love him, and he's so funny, and we're both into the same things. We're from absolutely different backgrounds, but we both love rave, and we both love comedy, and we both love horror. And like our conversations are just about television and film. So yeah, I'd go on with that. Also, because he's never boring, never ever boring. So like, yeah.
I'm going to ditch my original second question, and we're just going to go with this, because what I wanted to know is when else have you pulled off what felt like a dream ticket? But sitting here chatting about Tom Parker Bowles' love of rave and your desires to be on Gogglebox, you've already got me. So you and Tom, good friends, unlikely friends. And what's the value exchange in a friendship like that?
That's a really good question. I think I make him laugh. He says that I'm like Cersei of Game of Thrones. I think I make him laugh. I back him up. I'll back him up in anything. He's one of those friends that I will back up, right? And it's like if someone said to me, I've just seen Tom Parker Bowles kicking guinea pigs over a fence, I'd say, well, I think the question is who was tricking him, right? That's... one of those, what? I'm sorry? Who?
Defending to the end of the earth, yeah?
Yeah, no. We both absolutely see the restaurant industry for what it is. And...
discuss.
We're both very, very real about hype and about what is actually delicious. What is actually delicious, you know? We both kind of will go somewhere incredibly posh and then we'll just both go... Well, that was a bit shit, wasn't it? And then we'll both, and then I'll kind of go, oh God, but I had this takeaway from here. And it's like some kind of kebab from someplace in Crystal Palace. And I'll be like, this place was amazing.
Can I just say, I live near Crystal Palace and I have had the most amazing kebab there.
Have you been to Dem?
No, in Crystal Palace.
Very good. That's my favorite one.
Right.
I've literally banned myself from going there. I feel like giving them my photo and saying, just stop serving me. Like every time.
Turn me away.
It's like
put them on a retainer to say no.
Every time I go in, going, oh, what else do you do? Oh my God, yeah, that really sticky aubergine thing. I'll have some of that. Blah blah blah. Do you know something? I know I'm having a nice time because I'm two glasses of red wine in, and I can't remember the question. Was it a question? Was it a question?
Not really.
I know that I've got to.
I sort of segued. It was the value exchange between what is it, and I guess because I would consider you unlikely friends, but you're not really. You've got loads of common interests. You and Tom Parker Bowles, your love of rave, the fact that you can see the restaurant industry for what it is, and you'd rather go to Dems and Crystal Palace than somewhere that does emulsion and jus.
Me and him put on a food festival together. We were the curators of this big, massive London food festival. And
yeah, it won an award, didn't it?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, actually, yeah, it did.
No, it did.
It did win an award because I remember going up and getting it. Yeah. And then the people from the marketing departments tried to take it to put it in a cabinet like they always do. And I was heavily refreshed, shall we say. And I was like, and I grabbed it and said, I'm having this and I'm taking it home. And as I was walking through the car park, really, again, I was quite drunk, smashed it.
Oh, no. I haven't made such a stand.
The best thing, I always think of it when I go into my living room and it's like on my like wall of like things that are crap things that I've worn, right? And like there's a distinct lack of BAFTAs, right? But there's this kind of really smashed, chipped, like all the glass is cracked off it. It's literally, it looks like a murder weapon. But, you know, by the time we got to the end of that festival, we knew each other kind of inside out. So
I love his writing as well. I think he writes brilliantly, Tom.
Hang on, though. There was something like what was the goal? What was the original question? Was a golden ticket?
Well, it was going to be. No, well, you know, like I think you and I can agree that we both really don't work for a living. It's just we're lucky to do something we love and people pay us.
Yeah.
When else in life have you pulled off what feels like a dream ticket, like a pinch me, are you serious moment?
Oh God, what, look, I mean, that is how I feel a lot of the time. You become quite blasé. And then, you know, you get invited to number 10 to do something and you walk up to number 10 and the people on the door go, "Hello, Miss Dent, come in," you know, and it's like little bits like that. You think, oh my God, this is, you know, you walk up to Claridge's and they know your name and that, but that's all quite hollow. Are they hollow?
It's
and
not hollow because
things? Do you know?
No, it's not, because when you grow up and you have massive aspirations and you feel like you'll never, when you are a small town in terms of you're not having access to all of that, and then suddenly at number 10, they know your name.
Yeah, they know.
I don't think it's shallow. I think it signifies to you how far you've come.
You know, if I'm very honest, and I'm going to regret saying this, I think, because my man, Charles, I think almost every day whenever I look at him, I always think, how did I pull this off? Right? Like how did I pull this off, right? Because before we got together, I used to follow him on Insta and he followed me. And there was like at least 24 months where I used to just like look at his photo and go, oh, he's so pretty.
So you were following him?
Yeah, and we were following,
clearly screenshotting and appreciating his fineness.
I don't think I ever screenshotted, because what I did was occasionally, I mean, it was very gradual, because he followed me and we followed each other because we kind of knew people in common. And then, and I think that one day he left. It's a very modern, but very actually mundane way of people getting together that, you know, you kind of, one of you leaves a comment and then the other one leaves a comment back. And then after like, but it was about a year and a half, 2 years of leaving comments. And then,
So kind of digital flirting,
yes,
slash foreplay.
Kind of flirting. Well, I think, you know, we were both kind of wasting our time with, other lesser beings. and then
that's what, sorry, I mean about the pithy reviews, Grace.
I know.
So what, you built up this kind of chitter chatter online?
Yes.
But then took the leap to either jump into your DMs, or how did you do it?
So I was in the weird thing was, I was in Liverpool working. And I was feeling really, really miserable. I'd been interviewing Brett from Suede and I'd had a lovely time, but I was just feeling a bit down. You know, when you wake up in a hotel room by yourself and you just feel, what's the bloody point? And then I got this little message from him saying that he would like to take me for a coffee. And that was it. We were like, I mean, I must admit, when he said he wanted to take me for a coffee, I thought, oh God, and now I'm going to meet you and you're going to be a dickhead, you know?
Did you?
Yeah.
The voice of cynicism.
Yeah. I know, but
when it's not your first rodeo, you are entitled to be slightly jaded.
Oh Lord God. I mean, come on. I mean, and I always say this when people, and I mean, this happens all the time to me, you know, like people are going through stages in their life where they're looking and looking and looking to the point where they've given up. And then every time they go back out there and try to look again, you know, it's like, Mr. Oh, whoops, I'm married. And Mr. Oh, I didn't get your call. And Mr. I didn't realize we were going out tonight. Or Mr. Oh, I, you know, and these are the good versions. And then there's the really mad ones. Do you know what I mean? And people get to the point where they're absolutely just punch drunk with dating, to the point, you know.
Yeah.
And I always, and my mother used to always say to me, every pot has a lid, right? And I used to think, oh, shut up, mom, right? Or, but she used to say worse things than that, though. If two really awful people got together, she'd go, well, at least they're not spoiling two houses. I still say that now when you've got like a really horrible kind of media couple. Oh, you know, spoiling two houses.
But tell me this though, right? So he asked you for a coffee and you thought, oh Jesus, yeah. You know, you woke up thinking, what's the point? Mm-hmm. When you actually transferred it from a digital affection where you've got the safety of a screen to kind of, you know, shield you, what was that moment of seeing him like?
Oh God, I mean, he was absolutely gorgeous. That was the thing. And then like, and then I kind of saw him across the bar, and there's the you know, one thing is turning up when somebody is completely not the person that they said, and God, that happens. Can I get an amen, sisters listening? But then there's kind of, but then there's what's almost worse is when you turn, no it's not worse, but it's similar, is when you turn up and the person is the person and you're like,
oh
shit, here we go. Here is my heart going to be dragged and thrown at a wall from 25 feet. Kill me now.
And then he's going to come back in his car and just keep driving over
it. Exactly.
Yeah.
Although I will say that he had on, I'd kind of got him on the hoof, because he'd been kind of saying to me, oh, I don't think I can see you for like 7 days or 8 days or whatever. But we were talking all the time anyway. So in the end, I just went, look, let's just cut to the chase. I'm going to be in this bar. Come down. If you can't come down, fair enough. But then I just thought, look, I'm not having another 11 days before I find out that, you know, that you're actually a trucker from Dudley called...
Called Fiona.
Like, this is it. I'm not being catfished, right? And then he turned up and he was dressed like he'd been to the gym, and he had this jacket on that had been given to him by this kind of like, oh, like outdoors training camp that he'd been doing, because he's into like bodybuilding and stuff, and it had a spelling mistake on it, right?
Oh, but that really annoyed
and
you.
And I sat down and like, we were kind of flirting with each other. And then he started being a bit cheeky. And I was like, you're being very cheeky for a man covered in typos, right? And he was like, and I just think from that moment, there was kind of a bit of a match. But yeah, I mean, look.
He had you at typos,
he had me on an incorrect use of an apostrophe on his back. But yeah, look. But yeah, I mean, I think that. And I think that when you're going back to the whole pot has a lid, the fact is, though, that people just bloody turn up, right? They just do, you know? And you kind of go around and you do the dating and, you know, you chase people and you chase them and you chase them, and they're like, oh, I'll be available when this happens, but they're not. And then, or you play games, and then everybody kind of goes through a point where you just go out for a drink one night and you end up sitting with somebody, and then that's it. And there's no games, and there's no, I'm not sure what I want. There's just, it just happens, and you're kind of, it's inescapable. You know, most people, when you find out how they met the love of their life, it's just they kind of got off with each other one night and then they just never went home.
Yeah.
Like,
I love those deep love stories.
It's just like after 27 days, he went home to get more pants. And that's it.
Yeah, exactly. But I do actually, I do love those stories, because,
yeah.
I mean, I've never done the dating app thing.
No, I haven't either.
But I have friends that do. And it sort of chills my bones and exhausts me. And I don't even have to do it.
Oh, God. Yeah. No, I can't. I mean, I found, you know, after because I was married for a while. And then when I went back out being single, it felt like I'd missed from 2002 to about 2011, And I'd missed that stage where everything had gone digital. Like, I'd missed it, right? So
okay, so you got married in a sort of analog world,
yeah,
and divorced in a digital landscape.
Yeah, and I was kind of like, oh, well, it's okay, because I'm not going to go on Tinder, and I'm not going to go on OkCupid. I'm not going to do any of those things. And then you kind of realize after about 5 months of watching Gogglebox by yourself on Friday night that nobody's doing dating like it used to do. Yeah.
But it sounds like you didn't need to, because he just was all over your wall by the sounds of it.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, he's a good un. I mean, but then ask me again when we do this again when I'm 80 and I've had about 9 husbands by then. Ask me again.
And you'll go, what was his name?
I'll be like, sorry, who? Did I?
As you used to say to the teenagers, you won't even remember his name. I don't mean that.
Yeah.
I wish you nothing but a lifetime of happiness,
oh,
Grace.
I know, but look, it's
and like, Charles, if you're listening, good on you.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a certain, when you look at Joan Collins, she doesn't look like an unhappy woman, does she?
No, she doesn't.
Yeah.
And why would she? I mean, when you flick back through the Google images of her life, wouldn't you have a smile on your
Lord
face?
Oh, God. She's just a powerhouse, isn't she?
I love her.
I'm worried that our conversation hasn't been as structured and as sensible as Dame Marlene Phillips, which I listened to.
Did you think that was structured and sensible? Thank you.
Yes, it was.
I'll take that as a compliment.
You know, when I was a little girl, Dame Arlene Phillips had the keep in shape system that people never talk about. They always talk about Jane Fonda and, you know, her aerobics.
I didn't know this. Tell me.
But Dame Arlene had the keep in shape system, KISS. And it was, it was an aerobics workout, but it came on vinyl, right? So can I swear?
Yeah,
I'm so fucking old that I remember when we used to do workouts on vinyl, right? And when it got a little bit like bolshy, it used to skip, obviously, because you were like jumping up and down. So it was like keep in shape, keep super shape.
I love this.
And it was like reach. And it was like, it was the lowest impact aerobics in the world. I mean, literally, you could literally burn more calories opening a bag of Wotsits, right? And it was, but I used to do it. So yeah, whenever I see Dame Arlene, I always think that. I always think, God, you know, keep in shape, sister. I think she's incredible.
Yeah, she is. Oh, thanks for listening. I really appreciate that. Now listen, I realise that we are running horribly over time, so I'm going to hit you with my final question.
Go on.
I want to know what simply is your greatest guilty pleasure?
Right. My guilty pleasure is, and it maybe doesn't sound this guilty, but whenever I mention it, people look disgusted. It's like, I love Westfield Shopping Centre.
Why is that guilty?
Right, exactly. Thank you, friend. but I like when people go, oh, go shopping, and you see these pictures of people going down Bond Street. That's no fun to me. Bond Street, what? You're going to walk into a really kind of exclusive and snotty shop where a key ring costs £700. No. My idea of joy is looking at my diary, and I like a really full diary because I like working, because I like money, right? And like, love it. I love money. And it's like, I like to buy things, and I like to buy things down Westfield. And I like to work really hard, but I love it when you get like a Tuesday and there's nothing happening. And I just love to go by myself, and I love to wear no makeup whatsoever, and my hair all scraped back. And I just like to bumble about, you know.
In
and
Westfield. Like a teenager.
Yes, exactly like that. And the important thing here is by myself. I'm not dragging anyone else around. I'm not splitting up and getting back together for like after 20 minutes. I'm completely on my own. And I just, you know, sometimes I think the happiest moments in my life is when I've been on a heavy deadline to do some, deliver a book or whatever. And then I just have a day just faffing around, you know, buying some new primer, buying some new headphones, buying, you know, all that kind of, it's that. And like recently, I always talk about shops and supermarkets and about how much they give me joy, you know. And I've been getting my house renovated recently, and eventually I had to give up and move out for a bit. And people were going to go, where are you going to go? Are you going to go to Babington House? Are you going to go, you're going to move in somewhere amazing? And I was like, oh, going to move in at Westfield, right? Because this is like...
You haven't.
I did, right? Like there's a really nice, there's like these suites that are above Westfield. I went on holiday to Westfield and I went for 5 days, right? I ended up staying 21 days. In the end, Charlie was like, babes, you gotta come home. And I'm like, what? But why? Why would I come home? Why would I come home? I can look at bras till 10 a.m. in my own time, right? And then I can go and see the Fast and the Furious, and I can come back via Wagamama. This is heaven, right? Honestly. So I went on Radio London, and they do this thing called My London. And you go on and you have to talk about, you know, important cultural things. And I tried to talk about Westfield, and you could just see their faces of absolute disgust and horror. But like, I do mean it. There's a safety and there's a joy in consumerism sometimes that people don't admit.
But it doesn't matter where you go to, you know, listen, whatever your church is your church. If Westfield's your church, it's where you feel good. And great.
It's not the big things. It's the little things.
Yeah.
The big things, you know, you buy, and I, you know, I'm lucky enough, you know, you buy a big expensive handbag and you come away and you go, ah, do I really like it? Is that thing, should I take it back? Oh, you don't feel like that with a £9 lipstick, right? You come away and you're like, baby, I look beautiful, right? Like,
I look £9 so, fantastic. Yeah, I look fantastic with that stuff. Yeah, it's whatever works for you.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that your guilty pleasure was a 21-day stay above Westfields. Perfect.
21 days. I keep Absolutely. Thinking I should write a novel about it. I moved to Westfield.
21 days and nights at Westfield by Grace Dent.
Best holiday of my life. Yeah.
Grace, I have loved talking to you. My only fear was that I would not love talking to you as much as I love reading you. And no fear, you've been joyous. You are an incredible wordsmith. Whatever you do, never put the pen down. Keep writing the books. Aww. Keep making the podcast and keep scaring the holy crap out of the contestants of MasterChef.
Babes, thanks for having me. And I am glad that I didn't disappoint.
No, you lived up to everything. Everything.
Honestly, this has been a tonic. I kind of came on thinking like, oh God, do I have it in me to speak for an hour? And then, and yeah, it turns out I did. And it's really lovely to just sit and have a glass of wine with another woman and not think about the world outside. It's been really lovely.
I've loved talking to you. I hope we get to do it again.
Yeah, me too.
Please do go listen to Grace's podcast. It's called Comfort Eating. It's where you get all your great podcasts. Or if you've loved what you've heard today, download her book. It's Audible, yeah?
Audible, yes. It's me reading it out in my beautiful, refined accent. Yeah.
But if you can be bothered to read, and so you should be, because, you know, it's a gift, then go and buy that too. It's called Hungry, and it's fabulous. Grace Dent, my absolute pleasure. Well, that's it for this week's White Wine Question Time. If it's left you hungry for more, don't forget we've got hundreds of episodes in our back catalogue with much more of the same fascinating conversation with truly great guests. As always, the show is produced by me, Kate Thornton, with Libby Knowles and Richard Hatherall for Yahoo UK. And our music is by Andy Bell. And don't forget, we're taking the show out live on the road. Yes, kids, you can come and see us live in London's West End with 3 spectacular shows, kicking off with Craig Revel Horwood. Tickets are available now at Live Nation, Ticketmaster, or wherever you get your tickets. Then we're going to be following up with the cast of Dumb Breeding in November, and before that in October, reuniting the cast of Grange Hill. I promise you, it'll be a hoot. Grab your tickets while you can.
Hold up.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.